just be out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sir, we're going to get started. Ladies, we're going to get started. Sir, we're going to start.
Thank you.
No, you're good. Tell us.
Why we're here.
All right. We good? Yeah, we'll get started. Right. Good evening, everyone. We're going to get started tonight. I ask that we all rise, please, for the pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Dr. Enix.
Present.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Present.
Ms. Leon. Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Colon.
Present. Thank you. Councilwoman Leon will not be able to attend this evening. And moving forward, approval of the minutes. The minutes for the June 20, 2023 council meeting. Any comments on the minutes? Minutes stand approved. Public comment, as is customary, we will have public comment with a 5-minute time limit, starting with anyone who would speak on anything not being voted on, and then we'll continue on to our public comment for anything that is being voted on. We will start with those who signed up. So the first person who signed up this evening was Artie Caratola.
Hey everybody, how you all doing? Hope you had a happy fort. I'm Artie Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. On May 17th, at the city council meeting, I made a stand to speak up rudely, being accused by 3 city council members and our mayor as being anti-Semitic. Lindsay Weber, who was a reporter for the Morning Call, wrote an article on the front page on December 22, 2022 upon my statements that she took out of context and misquoted as anti-Semitic remarks. This all came about because I stated that in Bethlehem, our city, which was named after the city that Jesus Christ was born, so we should make our city an example for other cities because greater cities equal a greater USA. And we should all follow the teachings of Jesus upon that we should be good examples to cause the little ones not to sin. This way, other cities and our leaders of tomorrow, like you, would all have good examples and articles to build upon. I also stated that if we keep in mind Jesus' teachings upon loving God before all things, including ourselves, neighbors, brothers, sisters, and all of his creations, all the Ten Commandments would fall into place. For this, I'm a hater of Jews. Now note, I said that with a question mark. I did not make a statement with a period at the end of it. I'm a strong Christian and peace activist with Wake Up, Rise Up, Live for Peace, about love, peace, and world unity. Since 2015, we get over 200 million streamers each year. I and others strongly feel that militant Jews and sympathizers for them who are pushing for this anti-Semitism are into chaos and dissension rather than peace, love, and world unity. I feel that they are trying to divide people just like the Democrats and Republicans are doing. Jesus also thought that a house divided is not a house. I'm not alone with saying that it appears that these militant Jews are attempting to overthrow our government with their wit by trying to get others to do their dirty work as they did over 200 years ago with the Romans. And also they did approximately 125 years ago.
gain the Italians to organize crime. Back then, three founders of Murder Incorporated and the Italian Mafia were Arnold Rothstein, Meyer Lansky, and Benjamin Siegel, all militant Jews, not peaceful Jews, militant Jews. I'm sure that today the militant Jews would be happy if all of us Christians were crucified along with all the Jews for Jesus. Yes, if they would downgrade and immoralize Christianity and persecute as many Christians like me who are not afraid to speak up, to tell the truth and give the facts, it'll be easier for these militant Jews to get into public office and maybe one day have one as president in the White House instead of Christians that we had so far, mostly good Irish Christian boys. If they keep keying naive people to back them on this anti-Semitism guff, that they are a mistreated race because of Christianity, so we feel sorry for them, the rich and powerful militant Jews will one day control the entire world as they are doing a good percentage of today. As Jesus said, there are good Romans and there are bad Romans. There are good Jews and there are bad Jews. The Jewish and Christian Bible says God is everywhere. That means God is in all of us. We just have to pray to make God come out of everyone, including world leaders. If you're a leader, pray that God takes control of your life. If money controls your life, that's your God. There's no money in heaven. Dio di Benedict. Yes, that's Italian. It means may God be with you forever. My ancestry is Italian. Like the Jews, us Italians are looked down upon because one of ours placed the crown of thorns on Jesus' head and a few others actually crucified him. Some of our own did the dirty work for the militant Jews to organize crime with Murder Incorporated. But do you see us raising all kinds of hell that we are being discriminated upon? No, we laugh about it. And we even play parts in movies and TV miniseries as gangster bums. Why? Because us Italians know that our hearts are pure and we will do whatever we can within reason to help others, to give of our time for free, as I would do if I would be elected as the next mayor of your city in Bethlehem in 2025.
Mr. Caratolo, I ask you bring your comments to a close, please.
Okay. But some of you wish to downgrade me to make me look like an anti-Semitic derelict who would not be able to do the job. So you will convince the people of Bethlehem to pay $100,000 or more each year for a mayor who will do maybe less than I can do for free. You see, with me, it's not about the money. I'm not greedy. God has blessed me greatly, and I pray that he blesses each and every
thank
one
you,
of
you. Thank you, Mr. Caratolo. We're going to
I also pray that God guides you to vote for me in 2025 for the right mayor for you. God bless you all. I pray that you all vote for the right person.
That was the only person who signed up for the first public comment, but I think there were a few speakers who mistakenly signed up for second public comment. So I'm going to go through that list, starting with Paul Fondel.
Good evening.
No, sir. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Fondel, was responding to a question.
Good evening. My name is Paul Fondel, and I live at 413 Grandview Boulevard. And I'd like to address the concern regarding traffic at the intersection of West Broad Street, Hanover Avenue, and Club Avenue as it exists today. On behalf of the residents of Grandview Boulevard and the surrounding area, as well as motorists traveling through this intersection, we believe the following projects need to be done as soon as possible. Reinstalling the 25 mile per hour sign on the north side of Broad Street in front of Erie property. Install an additional 25 mile per hour sign with a curved arrow on the south side of Hanover Avenue just before the curve in the road. Reactivate the flashing warning light where the distracting billboard is located. We would like to have these problems taken care of as soon as possible, just to improve the intersection until renovations can be done at a later date. And this is something we're all three of us are going to probably talk about tonight. We would like to address the stormwater problem. Allentown has a 5-foot diameter storm drain tied into a Bethlehem 4-foot diameter drain, which causes flooding on Ritter Street when we have a heavy rainfall. To alleviate this problem, by checking on the size of that 5-foot drain compared to the 4-foot drain, we suggest that an additional 3-foot diameter pipe or larger be installed from Grandview Boulevard to the existing swale at the lower end of Ritter Street. In the conversation I had with the environmental group inspecting the clogged catch basin on a Bennett property, I was told that a detention pond would be required in the future. An above ground detention pond would allow some water to soak into the ground before flowing down into the river. If Hanover apartments are constructed as planned before these existing problems are addressed, surely new problems will occur. I have a comment about building size. While on vacation, a friend told me he stayed on the fifth floor of a hotel. He said he could not imagine a 5-story building in your backyard, what that would look like. It's living like being in a fishbowl. And I just want to make one other comment that I scribbled at the last minute. Bethlehem should notify Allentown of the water problem. So any future development, like Banco project, which is started already, should require a detention pond to control the water coming from Allentown into the Bethlehem storm system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fondle. And I will note that Mr. Mike Alcar, Public Works Director, is here this evening. If you want to speak with him after the meeting, he would be able to give better insight than any of us to what has or has not been already investigated over there. And our next speaker signed up was Ms. Terry Kloiber. We'll share if we have to.
I can't count them down at them.
Thank you.
That's only one set. Nice having paper.
Thank you. Thank you.
First, I wanted to say thank you to City Council, Zoning Board, Mayor Reynolds, Attorney Deschler, for the experience I've had going through all the meetings. I'm sorry, I'm Terry Kloiber, 345 Grandview Boulevard, Bethlehem. Sorry about that. I want to say thank you to the City Council, the Zoning Board, Mayor Reynolds, Attorney Deschler, for the experience that I've had through all the meetings and hearings for the Hanover Avenue project that was proposed for Bennett's lot. It certainly has been an experience. I've never been to a hearing before planning like this, so I found it quite interesting. The lawyer for the development, in my opinion, seemed very demeaning as he did his cross-examination. I guess he thought we didn't know what we were doing here, where in fact, we know quite well what we're doing here. We're standing up for our neighborhood, trying our darndest to keep it the charming, quiet little neighborhood that it currently is. As I was walking my dog, Coda, around the area, I couldn't help but think how nice it would be to have a green area there, and I've said that before. A walking park for the neighborhood, a place for the residents of Riverton to come out, the rehab and nursing home across from Juanita Street, to come out and just sit and enjoy some fresh air. A place for the children to play. Don't they deserve a safer place to play versus playing in the streets, running out between parked cars, constantly in danger of getting hit? Especially since every street has become pretty much a racetrack. We have kids all around that are running the stop signs. I stopped a bunch of them the other day and asked them to please, on their little motorcycles and mini bikes, please stop for the stop signs before one of them gets hit. I can't help but feel the folks in the nursing home get forgotten. I think how nice it would be for them to come outside and sit in an open green space versus sitting inside those four walls day in and day out. My uncle was over at Westminster for a few months before he passed away. So I know what I mean when I'm saying about being stuck inside. I know how good I feel when I get to go for a walk. And I'm always hoping against hope that the developer will pull out of this and go after some other little parcel of land somewhere else to try to build his little city on. I truly feel a community park and a green space would be so much better of a gateway to Bethlehem than housing project of apartment buildings. I'm hoping and praying that the two variances requested for the plans for this parcel of land do not get approved. We, the citizens, appreciate being heard, as well as the opportunity to voice how we feel. We're thankful that the city may be listening to us. I know we're not the only reason if these variances do not get approved, but if they aren't, I'd like to think that we mattered in the decision. And I'll be even more thankful and grateful when we hear that no vote. 220 residents in our neighborhood agree that we would be okay with three stories if the variance is approved for length. But know that these same 220 residents do not want any apartments in there. Probably asking too much, but it definitely needs to be downsized. Excuse me. Everyone is aware of the problem, and I apologize if I'm repeating what Paul said and what Mary Jo may say. Everyone's aware of the problem with 5-foot water pipes in Allentown funneling into 4-foot pipes in Bethlehem. I heard several people talk about a manhole cover popping up because of the extreme water pressure, but I've never seen it in person. That is until the storm last week, I think it was June 27th. I decided to see how the rest of the city was faring, so I headed out in my little car. I got as far as the bottom of my street, big time flooding. The water was 2 to 3 feet deep because Grandview was covered. And if you know Grandview and if you've seen it, you know the street humps in the middle. You've got your alleys coming in and then the street is actually a hump in the middle. So Ritter Street on the west side of Grandview was just plain flooded, so much water it was up over Grandview. I believe the water was just about the base of the last house and wouldn't doubt if they got water in their basement. On the east side of Grandview, Ritter Street was like a little river and flowing fast. As I looked down Ritter Street towards the east, I could see about 2 blocks down the alley was a gusher of water. The manhole cover had popped and the water was gushing out like a little mini Yellowstone geyser. It's one thing to hear about it, but to see it is a whole nother thing. The pictures show it. So what you have in the pictures, the first one looking north on Grandview towards Broad Street, you can see that the water has filled in the whole corner on both sides and is over on the drains. The second picture looking north again, this was just a little bit of a close-up to that first one. You can see there the water's level going across, so there's no way that you can tell how deep it goes on either side of Grandview. Well, actually on the west side of Grandview. On the east side, you can definitely see the water flowing down. On the third one, looking west, is the house. The water's almost up to the foundation, and that's a good bit of yard that's covered and sidewalk. And I don't know if you can tell in the picture, I didn't note it and I should have. If you look right at the end of where the water ends here, you'll see a little ripple going across. That's actually a drain pipe that's totally covered. The fourth picture looking east on Ritter, about 2.5 blocks down, just past that garbage can, it's actually a whole other block down. You can actually see the manhole cover, the geyser from the manhole cover. The fifth picture is looking east on Ritter Street. It's a close-up of the manhole and the water gushing out of it. And if you look on the balconies at the last balcony, I'm sure that person's a little worried about what he sees down below there in all the water. And the last picture is a screenshot that I took. It shows you that circle in the front, that's the actual manhole that popped up. So those are the pictures of what you always hear about, but you never get to see. And then the last thing, this just popped into my head because I got my tax bill. When are our seniors going to get a break on our taxes? So far this year, I've paid over $4,000 in taxes. That was fine when I was employed and making $75,000 a year. But now that I'm retired and not even making half of that, let's just say it's not fair and it's time seniors get a break on their taxes. Heck, even the restaurants give senior discounts. So maybe it's time Bethlehem and the tax people take a look at seniors. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kluger. Our next speaker signed up is Mary Jo McCool.
Good evening. My name is Mary Jo McCool, and I live at 449 Grandview Boulevard. And I'm probably going to rehash some of the same comments that have just been addressed. But I'm here tonight to express my concerns about the flooding along Ritter Street and Grandview Boulevard. My husband and I purchased our home in October of 1987 and have experienced flooding in our basement, 11 inches to be exact. Bethlehem Fire Department was called to pump out the water. During heavy rains, major snowstorms, flooding is exasperated. Storm pipes on the former Bennett Toyota lot appear to be inadequate. There is also only one storm drain on the property, and it's totally covered. When they mow the lawn, there's no way anything can go down. Ritter Street has there's also only one storm drain on the property and appears to be inadequate. There's also Allentown's 5-foot diameter converging into Bethlehem's 4-foot diameter dramatically compounds the problem. Ritter Street lies much lower than Grandview Boulevard, has a huge hump, and thus water flows back towards the west until there's enough volume to flow across Grandview and continue east along Ritter Street. My neighborhood is not, according to the state or FEMA, considered a floodplain, so flood insurance is not required. This discrepancy in the size of the two municipality storm pipes, I believe, is the culprit. There are only three storm drains at the intersection of Ritter and Grandview Boulevard, none anywhere else along Grandview Boulevard. There is a large drain along Ritter with a manhole cover in proximity. The amount of water along that flowing through the storm pipe has been so forceful that I have witnessed the manhole cover dislodged and lying numerous times. The problem is compounded during the infrequent cleaning of the storm drains by the city. The current property owner at the former car lot does not clear weeds along the curb or drain. People who do mow allow grass clippings to accumulate in the street along the curb. This further compounds the problem. When there's a major snowstorm and the city plows Grandview Boulevard, they also plow those storm drains shut. I truly believe the city must address this issue and replace the 4-foot diameter storm pipe with a 5-foot diameter. This is not the responsibility of the citizens to undertake. While I understand Ritter is considered a tertiary street, there are large chunks of macadam broken along some sections. These chunks are further broken down by the garbage trucks into smaller pieces and then washed into the storm drains, blocking the flow of water. Everyone in Bethlehem pays taxes. West Bethlehem residents are no exception. We only ask to see our tax dollars be put to work in our neighborhood for a change. 15 years ago or so, the mayor at that time promised my husband Grandview Boulevard would be paved. I'm still waiting. My understanding is that we are on the list. I can only hope the city will undertake replacing and upgrading of the flooding issue as part of the paving of Grandview Boulevard. Maybe the city can dispatch its engineers to assess the area and devise a plan to rectify the problem. Thank you for allowing me to speak regarding this issue. I hope the city is proactive in this endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCool. Our next speaker signed up, Russ, I believe Sutton. I apologize if I'm misreading that.
My name is Russ Sutton. I live at 2133 Saucon Avenue. I don't live in the city, but I've lived in the city for 30 years prior to that. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up to you. My main concern here is about the effluent. Hopefully that's going to be treated this time for PFAS. It really needs to be treated because it's an environmental threat to this whole valley. And not only that, the Lehigh runs into the Delaware, and Delaware runs to the Delaware Bay. And people and communities take water from that river for their own drinking supplies. And I didn't even realize toilet paper is forever chemical. I had no idea that was that as well. But my main concern here is, too, the expansion of the landfill that was going to happen. In addition to this, this is Bethlehem in Town Square, there was on the morning call on Friday, April 7th, there was an article about Bethel landfill expansion, a potential environmental disaster. I would like you to look that up if you can and maybe get some understanding of what's going on with this. We went to a meeting on the 26th of this month, Lower Saucon Township. I would like all of you, if you could, to view that on YouTube. And then you can understand what we're going through, fighting the township, trying to stop this dump and their actions. It's so nice being here where everybody's civil. It's not my township. I want to change it in the election, and hopefully we can. But I really appreciate you listening to us and understanding what we're saying. They're planning on rezoning an area that is 10 times the original rezoning they had before, going all the way down to Route 33 and the entire length of the Lehigh to underneath 33. So everything that's in Lower Saucon Township, that area, they want to zone in light industrial, even though it's residential now and there's residential houses there. They don't care. And we're really concerned about that because the dump owns most of that mountain. They inadvertently put on the screen a synopsis of how long the landfill is going to be there. I moved there in 1983. I would never bought or built my houses there if I knew it was going to last this long. That was 1983, and they told me it was, its lifespan was 3 to 4 years. Well, guess what? It's 2023, and they put a projection up on the screen that was going to go to 2064. They opt for 1.7 acres of new land for the dump. At 3,000 trucks a day, that's going to fill up in no time. They own the whole mountain. Do you think they're going to stop at that? No, because they own the whole mountain. And that's our concern. We don't want to destroy our whole mountain, and the whole area there is environmental danger. A little clear cut. I just want you to be aware that they're quadrupling the size. I have a map here, and originally they're going to be in this area here. They extended it all the way down in here. They expanded it by 10 times what it originally was. It's not done deal yet, and we're going to fight them. But that's not the point. The point, they just arbitrarily decided to do that off the cuff and not care about what any of the citizens wanted or any other participants in the community, including you in Bethlehem, Northampton County, Hellertown, Freemansburg, Bethlehem Township. They've never went to any of the places to tell them what their plans are. I myself went to every one of them and got them all on board to fight this. We wish you would do the same. And we wish you make sure they test for their forever chemicals coming out, the leachate that's going to go in the river, because it's going to affect a lot of people negatively, environmentally, and health. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. Just for anyone commenting or interested about the related to some things with the landfill, we'll be getting an update during the mayor's report for our agenda tonight. So if you would stick around after public comment, we'll be getting a permitting update and some other information. Our last speaker, who previously signed up, Brian Lucas.
Hello, everyone. I think the last city council meeting I was at, I woke up to actually very good news in the state of Montana, where I found out that 16 people about my age were filing a class action lawsuit against their state for putting the tax interests of fossil fuels above the health of their own citizens. And I think it's this kind of radical courage and this radical thinking by just everyday people that we need right now to help defend against the oncoming threat of the landfill pollution. I think in this matter, this isn't something where we should be assigning permits to the maximum amount of what is, you know, medically allowable or the minimum amount that we absolutely have to, but something that we must admit that no amount of this pollution is good at all. And I think that it sets a really terrible precedent for the future and for any other townships in the area that are going through something similar. I think since we have the ability to participate in the permitting negotiations, that we should be as proactive as possible, that we should choose all of our experts very carefully, that we should prepare everything well in advance of when it is necessary, as I can guarantee you, having been to the conditional use hearings, they have been very prepared through all of this. On a separate note, I actually also wanted to talk about the housing crisis that is happening nationwide, but most noticeably in the south side of Bethlehem, where I live. I think I stopped viewing this as a housing crisis in the typical sense a very long time ago, but I think for me it began to be an antitrust issue, where the housing markets are being artificially inflated to exorbitant rates that average everyday Americans cannot afford. It is because huge corporate housing conglomerates have been able to amass very large sums of houses in a very short amount of time. And I can give you an example that Amicus Housing, which has houses in college towns for the College of Charleston, Savannah College of Art and Design, Tulane, Loyola, Brown, Rhode Island School of Design, Providence College, Bryan College, Johns and Wales, Binghamton University, Lehigh University, and Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, have, I think, over 78 five-person housing units, just for their five-person housing ones. I actually went and I combed through the list of all of them, just to see really how many it was, and it's quite fascinating to hear that people can't afford to live here, and we wonder why. So I think in these kinds of instances, we should be pursuing much more aggressive and much more radical ideas in trying to defend against these, because we are also not the only city that is doing this, or that is experiencing this problem. I mean, we're not the only city that has this issue. I think that although the average people who live here might not be appealing to our tax base, you know, luxury housing is not what's going to house the majority of our population. And there's pretty much nowhere else for everybody else to go. And I'm personally, myself, I've been bounced around, I think, five different houses in the last year and a half. You know, and I'm a recent college grad. I've always lived with roommates. Even living with roommates, it's almost impossible. And when you read these leases, they're incredibly predatory, especially against our most vulnerable communities. So with the remaining time I have, more for rhetorical effect, I will spend the next couple of city council meetings reading off the list of houses that this place has, just so you can actually hear for your own selves how bad this is. To begin, for the five tenant units, 321 East 5th Street, 314 East 5th Street, 427 East 5th Street, 555 Hillside Avenue, 507 East 5th Street, 454 Burkle Avenue, 507 Taylor Street, 202 East 4th Street, 409 East 5th Street, 547 Hillside Avenue, 301 East 5th Street, 418 Thomas Street, 424 East 5th Street, 230 East Morton Street, 568 Hillside Avenue, 427 Fillmore Street, 404 East 4th Street, 311 East 5th Street, 514 Taylor Street, 232 East Morton Street, 476 Burkle Avenue, 512 Taylor Street, 509 East 5th Street, 511 East Packer Street, or East Packer Ave, 410 Webster Street, 444 Carlton Avenue, 521 Fillmore Street, 515 Taylor Street, 414 Webster Street, 513 East 5th Street, 480 Burkle Avenue, 331 East Morton Street, 425 Fillmore Street, 512 East 5th Street, and let me just remind you that these houses can all house five people and are completely unaffordable to live. Thank you.
Thank you. That exhausts our list that had previously signed up. So as is customary, I'll go around the room. Again, this is our public comment for anything not being voted on this evening. So anything that anyone wants to make comment about, I'll start to the left. Any comment? I turn to the wide center. Was there anyone in the center who wanted to make comment? Mr. Antalix.
These are my thoughts following the vote last council meeting on Resolution 10A, because I was shocked by the outcome. I considered the Bethlehem Chief of Police and District Attorney of Northampton County to be reliable and trustworthy experts in their fields. Therefore, I would have very high regard for their opinions concerning the matter at hand. It is their primary business. I took exceptional notice of the four votes against the resolution, but I will focus on three votes for the moment, since the manner in which the fourth vote was achieved is rather unusual. I am not aware of any of the three council members who voted no as possessing any formal training in legal matters or law enforcement, nor have I heard them allude to any such training during routine council meetings. I also noted that these council members were aware of the DA and the chief's opinions. I also noted the absence of citations of any experts who may have influenced their negative vote. Therefore, I could logically assume that their votes to some degree were personal and possibly emotional. Returning to the fourth negative vote, this member of council felt they were unable to intelligently vote, yes, because of lack of information, since a yes vote would be difficult to justify. A no vote was made. To recuse themselves would have the same effect as a no vote. The proper action would have been that the council member or the council president ask for a tabling of the vote. I can safely say, originally knowing the member, that their vote would have certainly have been yes had they had sufficient data in their possession. Why? Because council unconsciously developed factions as intimated by their past voting records. I would define the faction idea as a difference in community awareness. A good analogy would be attending a mythical, ancient, and world-famous University of Bethlehem football game. As a halftime anthem was played, the standing alumni would experience that welling up of internal emotions, even possibly tears. Others would remain indifferent and seated. If any of you have attended past council meetings involving the likes of Mike Schwader, Jay Leeson, Maggie Zabel, and Gene Belinsky, and now attending the present council meetings, you would very likely understand the analogy. The difference has been noted and commented on by a number of concerned citizens. There is no question that the present council is composed of intelligent, educated individuals whose prime motivation is to serve the community and its welfare. In maintaining professional decorum, it is strongly urged that council members resist responding to questionable public comments which they personally find offensive, since we have experienced that this can lead to disastrous consequences.
Is there anyone else in the center who wanted to make comment, who hadn't had a chance to speak yet? Turn to the right. Anyone on the right? Ma'am.
Good evening, Victoria Optoff Cordaro, 1682 Woodfield Drive, Bethlehem. I am here once again just to provide an update on the Bethlehem landfill. I did learn late today that there may be some information provided this evening from the mayor's office, so I did want to say thank you for the conscientious information that I hope to hear later on. I also want to provide some statistics and an update on what's currently happening with the landfill expansion so that everybody is aware. first and foremost, Lower Saucon Township had another council meeting in which council members proposed rezoning of the area that was previously rezoned and overturned by Judge Cassis. The new proposal will be discussed in further detail next Tuesday at the next council meeting. However, from the comments provided by the council members, majority council members, it appears that Lower Saucon Township intends to rezone not only the three large parcels that the landfill owns, but also all of the properties that are north on Apple Butter Road up to 78, and then all the way east until the Williams Township, Lower Saucon Township line, with the boundaries being 78, 33, and then, of course, our Lehigh River. So I want you all to be aware of that, because it not only is that a rezoning proposal, but it also will change the light industrial uses to a permitted as of right designation, which is very important. In fact, our council president indicated that the reason in which they want to make it as of right is because the conditional use proceedings did not accomplish much in their eyes. So, of course, we all knew that the landfill was not over, and in the most recent proposal, we know that there is much more to do. At the last council meeting, we discussed the amount of garbage that comes into the Bethlehem landfill as we currently sit at its approximate 200 acreage in size. I know there was some discussion about in-state, out-of-state, and I'm not sure about Bethlehem City's boundaries versus out-of-Bethlehem City boundaries, but I can tell you, according to the Lower Saucon Township Landfill Committee meeting notes, which are available on Lower Saucon Township Council's website, there is a designation of out-of-state garbage. And so I wanted to provide you the percentages that are indicated on the landfill's own reporting. October 2022, 24,302 tons of garbage at 71% came from out of state. November, 22,386 tons of garbage at 67%. December, 22,680 tons at 69.7%. Moving to the first quarter of this year, January was 18,233 tons at 59.8%. February was 18,424 tons at 64%. And March was 21,156,000 tons of out-of-state garbage at 57.1%. I am hopeful that council will continue to watch the wastewater treatment plant permit that hopefully is going to be negotiated with very stringent requirements. I'm hopeful that not only will there be PFAS testing and monitoring, but that PFAS testing and monitoring occurs frequently, at least quarterly, and that Bethlehem City has the option to independently test for those chemicals. And I'm hopeful that Bethlehem City will follow the encouragement of the EPA in continuing to enforce the most stringent limits that they can possibly enforce. And moving forward, as we all know, there is a 300,000 ton per day limit on the amount of leachate that Bethlehem City can currently accept. And I hope that Bethlehem never agrees to accept anything more than that 300,000 ton per day. Because if we're looking at quadrupling the size of the landfill instead of doubling the size of the landfill, then I guarantee you that that 300,000 ton per day limit will need to be negotiated, as they have already admitted in previous hearings. So I appreciate Bethlehem City's cooperation. I appreciate Bethlehem City's interest in caring about this issue and what happens to the Lehigh River. And I will say, stay tuned, and we will be back. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else to the right who wishes to make comment? We didn't yet have a chance.
All right, that concludes our first public comment. Moving on to second, courtesy of the floor. This is for anything that is on the agenda tonight to be voted on. No one had previously signed up. So again, I'll go around the room. This is for anything on the agenda. Anyone to the left? Anyone to the wide center? Mr. Antal?
Stephen Antalik, 77 Ridge. Looking at resolution 10B, firearm purchase, be frank. On two previous occasions concerning firearm purchase, council voted 6-1 with one dissension, both times. And basically that dissension is based upon personal feelings, a personal principle or whatever. Now, where would you like to have that weapon? On the hip of a retired officer who knows how to use it and knows how to protect citizens, or in a firearms warehouse at City Hall? Because that latter represents public welfare. We know that a previous officer sensed a potential holdup, and by merely exposing his gun, the thieves fled. Were they armed? We don't know. Had the officer not had his gun, there could have been a fatality. So, I am really at a loss why these votes are not 7-0. Because if you break the issue down to fundamentals, it's public welfare versus personal opinion. And in the best interest of the city, whose will should hold forth?
Was there anyone else in the center who would make comment on anything that is being voted on this evening? So again, I turn to the right. That will conclude public comment. Moving on to old business. Any old business from members of council? We'll get into communications. Communication 6A.
Memorandum dated June 15th, 2023 from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution. Blaze, a Dutch Shepherd, was purchased in 2016 with a donation as an expert patrol and narcotics detection canine with the police department. Police Department is seeking approval to properly retire Blaze according to the third class city code regulations and transfer ownership to his handler, Robbie Hoppus.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6B.
June 16, 2023 memorandum with an attached resolution and agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda also. Communication 6C.
The June 27, 2023 memorandum with a proposed resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending agreement with Barrasso Excavation Incorporated of Oley. Cost is $1,899,328 for a replacement and upgrade of approximately 1,500 feet of sanitary sewer collection pipe along East 3rd Street, Broadhead Road, and Broadway, plus the replacement and relocation of the interconnection metering chamber border with Fountain Hill. The project was identified in the city's Act 537 plan and will be partially funded by a $525,000 H2O PA grant. The term of the contract is 180 days. There are no renewals.
And Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum dated June 29th, 2023 from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. Permittee is the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center, and the event is 2023 Lehigh Valley Pride. Sub-permittee is Arts Quest. The agreement is from 9 a.m. to 12 midnight on August 20th. The agreement covers 1st Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between 1st and 2nd Streets.
and Resolution 10F is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6E.
The June 29th, 2023 memorandum from City Solicitor Jonas Burke Jr. with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. Permittee is Arts Quest, and the event is the 2023 Women's World Cup viewing event. The agreement is from 5 p.m. on July 26th until 1 a.m. on July 27th. The agreement covers First Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between First and Second Streets.
And Resolution 10G is on the agenda this evening. Moving on to reports, I have nothing to report this evening. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. A couple things. One is, first of all, I just want to thank everybody within our public safety departments who have both helped to operate and pull off our fireworks show last night, which I think a lot of people had positive feedback about, but that takes a lot of work in setting that up and the logistics, so I just want to thank them publicly, as well as our public safety officials who had to respond, obviously, to fireworks being set off within the neighborhoods, within our city. We've talked about it before. We will continue to talk about it. We'll think about what to do for next year as far as letting people understand and educating people and just how there's not really any place that's legal to do it within the city of Bethlehem based on the law on 150 feet and what people are allowed to do. So we're already talking about what we're going to do as far as that is concerned for next year. Also next Wednesday, I know some of you have been before, but Bernie Fritz Night at Hypo Park is next Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. So if City Council is available, it's a great night with a lot of people coming from the neighborhood and even people that grew up in the neighborhood that live in other parts of the city coming back. But that's over at Hypo Park from 6 to 8. And I am going to turn to Mr. Spurk and Mr. Evans for updates, but I just wanted to make a couple comments. Again, we had the first speaker tonight who made comments that were anti-Semitic, and it is important that every time those comments are stated, that we as a city reject them. And one of the things that we have talked about over the past year and a half as far as our administration, working with those within our community that are looking to eliminate anti-Semitism, is that we call it out every time we hear it. And it can be difficult, but we have seen over the last several years about what happens when people don't call it out, or if they get tired of calling it out, or they get sick of calling it out. People have a First Amendment right to say what they want, and they have the microphone for those 5 minutes, but we have the microphone as well. And when they are done, this is not an opinion of a policy difference or what City Council should vote on or not, but it is important. And it is part of the reason why we have seen those type of ideas gain some public, I would say, normalization in the last several years, is because many people have decided that the best way to get past them is to ignore them. And I can tell you in all of our conversations with everybody in our community that does this work on a day-to-day basis, when we talk to people in vulnerable and affected communities, that is not the best strategy for us to take. And that is on every single person when we hear them to find a way to be able to make it clear that we don't accept them. And this is not the administration's meeting, this is City Council's meeting, but we will continue, if need be, respond every single time we need to reject that type of those type of comments. And make sure that it is not normalized in our society, and it's not normalized in this place, that that type of behavior is okay. I will now turn to Mr. Spurk, who is going to make some comments as it relates to the landfill permit that I know members of council, members of the public had talked about last time. This is an issue that the legal department and Mr. Boscola and everybody in the water and sewer department have been looking at for several months, and I wanted Mr. Spurk to be able to give an update here.
I think the last time I addressed council on this topic was back in February, and at the time indicated that the city had pretty much given up control of the landfill in the area surrounding it over 30 years ago, when decisions were made to sell the property, to give an option for the property. And said at that time, I think in February, I think Mr. Buscola sent a letter at that time also suggesting that the focus for the city was more properly not on what happened 30 years ago and what rights were given up then or what rights were sent to Lower Saucon Township. The focus wasn't so much on political infighting or zoning infighting in Lower Saucon, but that the city's focus and resources would probably be better spent on areas that directly impacted the city, namely our wastewater treatment plant. We we referred at that time to upcoming permitting, not only from our own discharge permit as a city to the landfill, but also the, any future state and federal permitting that would be required if there were any expansion. So we're at the point now where we're focusing on the, as we said, and have considered that permit, the city's individual discharge permit that's given. So we considered two broad areas. Number one, insisting upon some flow control from the landfill, because in wet weather events, the plant does get overwhelmed at times, and that's a problem that the city's been addressing. And one major way to address that would be to include in our permit some requirements for flow control from the landfill so that they can regulate the amount that comes to us when, which will help us in those events when the plant can get overwhelmed and it's difficult to process everything. That's not the only effort that the city's making in that regard. There's also ongoing improvements to the plant that are currently being funded and in process through the Act 537 process to help the plant not get overwhelmed when weather events cause strict or overcome what the plant can handle in terms of flow. So regulating the amount and when and how landfill flow comes in is part of that overall process of regulating the flow. And the second thing we're looking at and are implementing is the concerning the forever chemicals, PFAS chemicals. We already test, there's already quarterly testing for any number of chemicals that are in the current permit, the quarterly testing paid for by the landfill. But we also are implementing in addition to testing for the PFAS chemicals as well, along with all those others, so that we can get an idea and a handle on exactly what we're dealing with. And those, as far as I know, those are in process and moving to finality in the updated permit. We're also looking more broadly at some of our other permits, because this is not the only permit that we issue, the discharge permit. So we're looking at others to see what other sources of flow might be worthy of PFAS testing so that we can get a handle on that. There might be PFAS flows coming from other places that we don't even regulate as permit right now, depending on quality and where those are coming from. So it's really not just an individualized focus on the landfill in this regard, but an overall focus on the whole plant and a way to get a handle on what we're dealing with there. So that we'll be well positioned if and when there are federal or state regulations that would impact.
Mr. Buskell, is that a fair?
Mr. Spurk, can you just mention the part about the regulations as they relate to our ordinance and as the as whatever regulations get updated
at the EPA or DEP level? Yeah, the current ordinance and the current permit, all our current permits have a provision in them that says in the event that there's federal or state regulation, that immediately becomes part of the permit. There's no need to have to go amend it or pass a new ordinance or a new permit. That has always been in there. So we're just trying to get ahead of that. There is no federal or state regulations yet on that area, but let's see what we have and let's see what we're dealing with now. And yeah, those any kind of regulations like that would immediately become part of the permit.
Thank you. So, and that idea is that if something would come out having to do with PFAS, even after permits have been issued, they automatically update as it does with other chemicals and so on and so forth. But even with that being concern, even with that being the situation, we are looking at the ability of us with the time frame as far as so much is unknown about what those potential distances of the permits could be. Traditionally, as far as what those options are, and that's something that we are finalizing. But I also believe that until we issue the permit, it just continues as the same one from last year. Is that correct,
yeah,
Mr.
Spurk? The permit provides that.
Yeah, so I know we had talked about June 30th or July 1st there, but until we get those answers, then there's no permit that is issued. So just as far as that update is concerned. I would Does anybody from City Council have any questions?
I had a question, Mayor Reynolds, and then I'll open it up to other members of Council, of course, and thank you for the update. Mr. Spurk, the one question I had, Mr. Spurk, you alluded to that the quarterly testing is paid for by the landfill. Who's actually conducting the testing? So are they, I mean, I would assume they're not the ones doing the testing and then sending us the results, but I just want for my own clarification to understand what that process looks like.
I think I can answer that. Most of our permits are set up such that there's shared responsibility for sampling. All permittees are sampled on a quarterly basis. Under most scenarios, the city will sample twice a year and the permittee will sample twice a year, meaning every other quarter will sample. They sample, they self, it's called self-monitoring. It's in the federal regulations. It's a shared responsibility, if you will. They pay for both their own testing and our testing. Both sets of reporting gets sent back to us, and we file that annually with the EPA. So all of that data gets submitted to the EPA anyway. A lot of it is to ensure that there is a bit of buy-in, if you will, from these companies. You know, we have 37 industrial waste discharge permittees, and I think they all recognize that they have a responsibility to protect the environment, and I think the federal rules are set up in such a way that it forces them to take ownership, if you will, of part of that process by self-monitoring and sharing the burden with the city. So that's how the program works.
Thank you for that clarification. So it's half done by us, half done by the landfill, as it's laid out in the regulations.
Correct.
And then if there's a violation or a breach of the agreement, however you want to phrase it, in the testing, let's say we collect the sample and then notify any of the permittees that this result came back in violation, is there a, they get to do their own sample, or is it just a strictly this result?
There's various levels of enforcement mechanism. In the case of PFAS, because there are no limits, there's monitoring only, so it's really data gathering.
Understood.
Where there are actual limits with some other pollutants that are named in the permit, if a permittee violates one of those things, so say one quarter, they exceed whatever chemical limit in the permit, we do follow-up sampling, and there is a, I would say, a ratcheting up of penalty against the permittee. So if you violate it once, you get X penalty. If you violate it twice, you get X plus penalty. And it's all about forcing them to get back within compliance.
Thank you, Mr. Bosco. Those were my only questions right now, but I will turn to other members of council. Dr. Van Horten.
Mr. Bosco.
Yes.
So I'm no expert on PFAS, but I did read in the morning call that over in Emmaus, there was groundwater contamination from a fire retardant testing ground for firefighters, and they actually had to spend millions of dollars to redo their groundwater system. But it reached a level, like there must be a level to reach to know that this is unsafe for human consumption. Like, are we looking at the same way of monitoring levels that flow into the plant from all your 37?
Currently, no. You know, there are no regulations governing PFAS except for drinking water. So the state DEP passed a drinking water regulation that goes into effect in 2024. We'll start monitoring our drinking water for PFAS. And there are certain limits. I don't know exactly what those limits are, but there are numbers where you have to be below,
right,
for drinking water systems. And that's where Emmaus... Gets hit, because they use their groundwater for drinking water supply, so they're concerned with that, with meeting that limit for their drinking water sources.
And so putting these measurements in for PFAS into what's coming out of the leachate going into your plant will allow you, if our stuff that's coming out of the plant going into the Delaware has high levels. We might be able to trace it back to which of these 37 industrial waste permittees.
That's the whole idea that EPA is trying to get their hands around, because they understand that PFAS is kind of like everywhere. Right? It's been used throughout industry and all kinds of products for the past 70 years or more or less. So they're trying to just understand where it all's coming from, where it's all going, what are the proper remedies? Do we attack it at the source, you know, at the industrial source? Do we treat it at a landfill? Do we treat it at the wastewater treatment plant? So I think the initial phase, typically for when EPA is developing regulations, is first data gathering and study to find out how bad is it, where it is, and then start to think about how we're actually going to control it.
And I would just add to that, Dr. Pegmore, too, is that I think the 37, as I've learned, the 37 that we currently have industrial permits with are based on what chemicals currently we're allowed to test or limits and so on and so forth. The thing about PFAS is there are actually some users that actually produce more PFAS than the landfill does that currently are not covered under, because we weren't testing for PFAS. So part of the DEP and EPA regulations are not just as far as what the limits are, but it's like what is like the class of users that we're allowed to then require a permit for. And that's one thing that I was impressed with that Mr. Buskell's department and the legal department were looking at, was the idea also not just of what can we do with our current users, but there are other people out there that theoretically are other types of uses that are producing more that currently we can't go to them and say, like, you need to get your own individual permit for our wastewater treatment plant because it's not something we're allowed to do. So that's something as well that we're lobbying and talking about.
Please don't take my questions as anything other than trying to understand a complex topic as it relates to both science and regulatory
expertise. We spent a lot of time in the Emmaus situation because it's Jack.
Well, I was just going to add, you mentioned the Emmaus situation. My assistant solicitor who's assigned and working with Mr. Buskell on this permit is in the same law firm as the Emmaus solicitor who's been well educated in these areas, so that's another source of we're on.
Sure, and this all sounds like promising steps forward. The last thing I would just say in relation to our eighth speaker, Victoria Cordato, you know, different states handle environmental regulations differently, and we in Pennsylvania may be, I don't know this for sure, but we may be more progressive, but it's good to know where your trash comes from, because if our trash is 70% coming from out of state, and if a majority of that is coming from states like Texas or other states that really don't have an environmental understanding, we you know, looking at where our trash comes from becomes more and more important, I think. That's all I would say. But thank you so much for all the information.
Thank you, Dr. Howard. Any other questions from members?
Yes, I just had a couple of questions. Mr. Vescola, you mentioned penalties. Are those financial penalties, or is there some other mechanism?
Yes.
And can you give us a rough idea of sort of what the first, like, what kind of dollar amount are we talking about?
It's defined in the ordinance. It's in the low four figures, $1,000.
Right.
Kind of ratchets up from there.
Okay. And so I was glad to hear about the alternating testing, because it seems like if there was a big discrepancy from quarter to quarter, so you had a higher number and they had a much lower number, we might want to keep a closer eye on that. And I don't know if Mr. Spurk or Mr. Buskell is the correct person to answer this. What happens if they say no? I mean, right now we're in a moment where we're kind of basing things on the December EPA letter, which was recommendations, right? And so we want to go with those recommendations because we're on a roadmap to regulations. We can, if you go to the EPA's website and look at their very good website about PFAS, I do recommend it. You can really see every step of the way for the last several years how the EPA has been working in this. December letter seemed to be like a really important moment where they were saying, okay, we've got recommendations and encouragement, right? They use the word encouragement a lot. So what happens if during this period where we're still in just that recommendation stage, the landfill says, no, we're not going to test? Can we, I mean, how much leverage do we have? I mean, well, we do have leverage. They have to have a permit, but right now we're in this month-to-month situation with them. So what do we do?
It's a good question, because technically, if it's in the permit for them to monitor, and they say they don't monitor, we can penalize them for violating the permit. However, there's not a whole lot of backup from other regulatory bodies like EPA, DEP, because this body of regulation hasn't been well developed yet. So I think, and we've had discussions with the landfill about this, about renewing the permit, and I think they understand that PFAS regulation is coming, right, and that they are targets of this regulation. So I think they understand that to be a good partner in this situation, it's not a really big burden, be perfectly honest, to sample for a particular set of chemicals once a quarter. And I think they basically agreed, at least verbally to us, that they're going to comply with that.
Okay. And so the way that it works is we just give them a permit and like, these are our terms, and they, okay.
Yeah.
So, yes. And they wouldn't say, no, we'll just keep going with what we have. I mean, they can't do that. Once we have issued a new permit, we now are kind of in the driver's seat in terms of...
It gives us some leverage. Obviously, if it's in black and white in a permit, then it gives us some leverage to enforce at least monitoring. Again, we're only talking about monitoring these chemicals. We're not talking about treating or meeting unspecified limits.
Is there a way to treat for PFAS to reduce its entry into the system?
There is a lot of investigation and study in that regard. A lot of people are working on ways to do it. But I don't think there's anything that has been... I think there's a lot of pilot studies out there going on in the country. But nothing, I don't think, is full scale yet on how to remediate the PFAS.
And this is a bit of a simplification, but our ordinance, our local ordinance, is based on how you're going to enforce locally those DEP and EPA guidelines. So a lot of what our numbers are in there and the remedies and so on and so forth are based on the EPA and DEP regulations. So I think it's like a two-part question, as you said. It's like, what do we do in the meantime about whether or not they are testing or not, versus what are going to be the remedies, or what's going to be the DEP and EPA regulations, because we've seen that in other areas. I mean, I think with our, like, some of our rainwater stuff and so on and so forth, as far as people that have violated that or put different things in there, like when they have to pay large fines that are often federal fines and things like that. So we, on the local level, really are about enforcing what those federal and state guidelines are. So I think we, like everybody else, want that clarity as quickly as possible, including the best way to treat it, the best way to be able to deal with it, to limit it, so then we're able to enforce it. But right now, without that kind of, and that's been the legal backstop, as I've been told, about what's the basis of our permits, is what DEP and EPA regulations are. That's why we're allowed to change those every time new regulations come out.
Right. And I did take the time to go over the ordinance very carefully after our correspondence, and did note that we also do have the right to be more restrictive, not more lenient, but more restrictive than a federal or a state regulation locally. Not that we, since there are no limits right now, there's nothing to be more restrictive of. My last question, and I really appreciate this time to have this conversation during the mayor's report. I appreciate your earlier comments as well, Mayor Reynolds. My last question is, after having read the ordinance, I noted some areas that perhaps we could do some adjusting to, and is there anything we can do for you in terms of, you know, the ordinance right now? And if not, just the offer to continue talking about this and looking at it.
I think it would be a good thing to talk about, including getting Mr. Pinnell and Mr. Spurk together, but, you know, we're always open to that conversation. Be more than welcome to take a look at it, 100%.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Cramsey-Smith.
I just have two questions. Mr. Bosco, you talked about the testing, the self-monitoring, and basically how the city does it twice a year, and then the permittee does it twice a year. And I guess I'm thinking, in speaking about, well, the landfill and all the other permittees, are we guaranteed that they are they doing self-testing, like by their own employees, or are they doing independent testing?
They, they have to follow the same procedures that we follow. So typically they have to use a certified lab to do the sampling and analysis.
So it's independent.
They have to follow the same industry standards that we have to follow. That way all the data can be is repetitive and can be comparable when we report it to
Okay. I just want to make sure that we can be assured that it's going to be valid testing, that, you know, not to be an alarmist, but that's very important. And I just wanted to clarify, because regarding where we're at with the permit, now right now are we on a month-to-month basis with the permit? Because I thought I heard the mayor said something about the permit, no permit issued until we get more information. Did I hear that incorrectly, or can you clarify, please?
No, we just haven't finalized the new permit with all this language in that we've just talked about tonight. So the old permit stays in effect.
Okay. So we
the current up, permit
we have a current permit. Okay. All right. Thank you.
But the good news, I believe, is that like there's no like deadline there. It's just the current permit stays in effect until we issue the new permit. So it's not a situation where like if we don't do something by July 10th, then like it's automatically renewed.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
Okay, and then Mr. Evans is going to give a brief kind of financial update on where we are through the first 6 months of the city here.
Council, thank you for giving the opportunity to deliver financial update for the first half of 2023. Every year has each unique characteristics. Last year we did experience a couple line items that we highlighted for you at the early July council meeting. Last year we saw a couple revenue item move up. That was EIT. When we saw rising wages across the region, across the country, we benefited by increasing our EIT line. We also saw a large jump last year in deed transfer when houses sell and the market moves and interest rates were low. We benefited from that. On the flip side, our interest income last year was low. Interest rates still didn't start rising until the second half of the year. And permits we saw start to rebound. At the same time, last year in the expenses, we faced high medical all year long, ran at or above budget. And at the end of the year, we did run over budget. We covered it with some other areas and some transfers we made late last year. Much like gasoline, last year at this time, we sat in front of you and had a long list of transfers we needed to make into gasoline accounts when gas was running at $4 and $5 a gallon. And then, 2022 audit is nearing completion. But it did end well. We know the final numbers are good. It's a matter of having auditors come and reconcile those final accounts for us. 2023, the indicators are different, but I will tell you at the same time last year is to the 6/30/22 to 6/30/2023 that this year is off to an even better start. I'd like to highlight a couple of those areas for you tonight. Real estate taxes is our largest revenue line item by far. It's over 35% of our overall revenue. We collect $33 million a year. That is very much consistent on pace to meet budget. 95% of all real estate taxes are now collected. The discount and base sessions are completed. The fourth installment will be due in August, but that's always been a very reliable, consistent revenue for us. The host fee is also reliable and consistent. We've now collected 4.9 or 50% of our budget at $9.8 million. So we're right on the mark with two of our very large revenue items. There are five line items that have exceeded or are exceeding budget at the six-month mark. The first is EIT. Even though we knew that was on the move last year, and we did see an increase last year, we did increase the budget amount. Last year was at $5.6 million at midpoint. This year it's at 6.4, so we're $800,000 over last year's number at the six-month mark, and that's 62% of our annual budget. Mercantile tax last year was at $2.2 million. At this year, we're at $2.9 million. We've already exceeded the budget. We're at 113% of the budgeted number, 2.6. The activity in permits and housing, we know that development continues to stay strong, and we are $100,000 over in permitting. We're $125,000 over the projected amount in our housing numbers. Our interest income, interest did take off last year, remains high, or higher, you know, than historical the last several years. Last year, our interest income was $24,000. This year, we've earned $555,000, so that's a real large jump. We did move our budget number from 75 up to 350, so we increased our budget expectation on what the interest income would be, but we're already at 158% of our budget number for that line item. Deed transfers slowed up a little bit. We did see that as interest rates moved up. We saw it coming ahead of budget time, so we reduced that budget to be conservative. And the deed transfers, which are red hot the last 2 years, it was 1.05 last year. This year is 835,000 at midpoint, but we only budgeted 1.6. We pulled that back, so we're actually over 50% of the budget amount for deed transfers. So that was a good move with the budgeting trend. We have two that are a little bit behind. One is recycling. It's a very small amount, but just I wanted to highlight it because it continues to be a line item that drops through time. It's just a soft market. It's a resale of our sales. It's not the recycling fee that we collect that takes care of all the curbside contract we talked about last year. But for the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've continued to see the resale of recyclables that we collect both curbside and at our center drop and drop. And last year was down to 54,000. This year at midpoint, it's only at 25,000 for 6 months of sale of recyclables. So it's barely over the break-even market. The other one that's down a little bit is ambulance fees. If you do remember, there was an increase in Medicare reimbursement late last year. We did increase the budget from $3 to $3.6 million based on the numbers we received from our EMS department. Last year, we were at 1.45. This year, we're at 1.6. So we're actually up 200,000 over last year, but we're just at 44% of budget. So we're maybe a couple hundred thousand behind pace at 6 months. We do have a meeting scheduled with our third-party billing agency to review that. And it's not too far up the pace, the fact that Medicare reimbursement started. There's a lag until that would take in. The first billings of the year received would be actually billings from the end of 2022. So we think we can tighten that up before the end of the year. So overall, we have a number of revenue items that are over budget. On the expense side, personnel, our largest budgeting factor, we do have a lot of savings from this. We have our salaries account at $35.1 million for the year. That's for all salaries. We include in longevity and overtime and the temporary help, the seasonal hourly labor we have, personnel is actually $43 million as a total line item. We have spent $20.7 million year to date. That's 48%. So although it does sound close, and it is close, it's a little below budget. There are savings of over $750,000 in vacancy factor. And what that means, even if we filled every position that's open right now, and filled it, and they stayed filled at the present rates that are offered for those positions, the remainder of the year, we would still be $750,000 less than the budget factor, because those seats have been open. Even if someone leaves, we begin the hiring, and we find someone pretty quickly, it's still several weeks until we can begin the interview, until we close the deal, meaning if we make an offer, that offer is accepted, the background checks come in, the medical exam is completed, the week's notice is giving out the current employment they might be at until we bring them into the city working for us. So that, although it's not something we plan to do, we don't want to have open seats, we want to have maximum productivity out of our workers. That's a fact right now that there's a labor shortage across the country, and we hear from different municipalities are experiencing the same issues we are in across all parts of our city. It's public works and police lead right now as far as the number of open seats, and we continue to find ways to recruit and fill those seats, but the reality is there are a number of openings that still remain, but we're working to fill them. Gasoline, which was over budget last year. Last time we came to you, we were at 64% of budget. This year, we're only at 44% of our budget for gasoline. We're actually $20,000 than we spent last year, so that's a good thing that we increased our budget based on what happened to meet where we felt the numbers would be at this year, and that we are below the spending of last year. And the last one is a big one, is a medical. Our medical is one of our largest line items. Last year at this time, we had spent $4 million in medical expense. This year, it's $3.01 million. So we're not going to wait a time we say that, but $1 million less in medical. We are self-insured, so we don't pay premium where we know what it's going to be at the beginning of the year, and we're done. It's as the claims come in, we handle them. We do have stop loss for the catastrophic losses, but versus where we were last year, I said we rode hot all year long, and we ended a little bit over. We are 56% of budget last year. We are at 40% of budget at 6/30/23. So We do know this is a very for two good quarters year to date, but it's only 6 months, and we'll remain vigilant. Hope a lot of the trends will continue to work the best to ensure that happens.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. And one of the things we talked about last year during both my budget address and also our budget is how we want to always budget conservatively, because we want to be able to be pleasantly surprised or optimistic about when those revenue line items come in above. And we talked about how we separate one-time expenditures and one-time revenues from sustainable expenditures and sustainable revenues. And obviously the name of the game is that you want your sustainable revenues to outpace your sustainable expenditures. Obviously over the last couple of years we've had economic growth and we've had an economy that's been moving along and the city's been benefiting from it. I believe off the top of my head is that, I mean, our EIT is a good example, is that we budgeted the same amount in 2023 that we received in 2022, even though we have seen historical growth there for probably the better part of a decade, not knowing what's going to happen, talk of a recession, talk all these different things that have not happened yet. So we are ahead of the game from where we budgeted, but as we said, we don't know what's going to happen throughout the rest of the year. I will say, though, is I want to give credit to the administration and I want to give credit to council for passing the budget, because we really have we still continue to spend conservatively, and that's what's put us in the financial position that we're in. And we've talked about that before, that we have the best bond rating of any city around. We've been able to pay off, in a couple of years, we'll have paid off $100 million in debt, as long as we continue along our current debt schedule, which is there's no reason why we shouldn't, and really put us in a strong financial position. But it comes from the idea that we budget honestly and we budget conservatively. That has been a collection of decisions from this city council and previous city councils and previous mayors that have got us into this position. And I thought it was important for Mr. Evans to deliver kind of where those numbers are, as far as what we're looking at. And I certainly, just as with the last topic, if there's feels important enough, if there's anybody in city council that has any questions at this time about kind of where we are in our financial picture through 6 months.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds and Mr. Evans. I have a couple questions and then I'll open it up to all council. Mr. Evans, you talked about the vacancy factor, and of course that leads to savings if those positions are open, but that also impacts our capacity to deliver service when we have certain positions open. I'm not looking for the exact numbers, I don't expect you to have that, but overall, just in terms of the number of applications that are coming into City Hall, I know we all were impacted during the pandemic, from City Hall to our local coffee shops with personnel and labor issues. Have we seen any noticeable change in terms of the number of applications or interest we're getting for some of these open positions?
It's better than it was last year. It's still like more. Something that we face is, we named that one of the staff names, just the constant churn. When you start to bring in some new, some fresh talent, which is very nice, we continue to lose people because people are coming and going. They're more turnover than there has been in the past. We have a lot of great long-term employees, but from time to time we do lose. It's a very competitive marketplace, and we do believe we have a nice compensation package between the salary, the pension, something unique that municipality, not every organization is able to offer that. Our medical plan as well, we have our vacations and holidays. So we believe we have a good plan that we're able to offer, and when we do have an opportunity to interview a couple good applicants, we've brought some, I would say, very talented individuals, but we're still sure. Yeah. So could we like to see more? It's not like it was pre-pandemic, but certainly better than it was 21 or even in 22. So it's a slow return.
And I would say we felt that the most in public works and water and sewer, especially with our entry-level positions. I think those are the two departments between Mr. Alcohol and Mr. Buskold that have reported the most over the past 18 months. It's how difficult it is to fill a lot of those jobs. Because one of the things that's happened in the Lehigh Valley is there's more good entry-level position jobs than there used to be. And with the growing economy within the Lehigh Valley, there's just more economic opportunity. I think we are not immune from the same vacancies that a lot of other people are going through. I think, knock on wood, we have been able to hold on to a lot of the people that are running our departments, that are the superiors, that are helping to organize the projects, carry out the projects. But absolutely, if you know people that want to work for the public works or water and sewer department, we are certainly in the business.
We know where to send them.
Yes.
And then the follow up to that, with the vacancy in some of these essential 24-hour operations, and if you touched on this, Mr. Evans, I apologize that I didn't catch it. Were we, in terms of personnel expenditures, where are we at with overtime as a whole? I don't need to, you know, by the different departments and bureaus, but what's the overtime looking like?
Largest overtime budget is the police and fire are the largest. Police is just at 6 months, just under the budget amount. I believe their budget is 220. Comes in pretty equally throughout the summer. So at the 6 month, we're just below. You'll see a little bit of a surge in, because vacation time hits, we need to backfill a little bit. In the fall, it'll drop off. So that's, it's a very good place. It's lower than it was last year at this time. Fire's running a little higher than last year, and that's, there were several vacancies that occurred after the academy happened. And we have the academy once a year for, police have multiple academies through the year. The fire academy is in February. So since that, right around that time, there's two or three openings, and there's been about three or four since then. So with that surge of openings, overtime has also come up until we get that people's out to that next academy, that will continue to remain high. So that's a little bit over. But the flip side is when you have the overtime, it's the it's caused by the vacancy that can cover. You know, we'd rather have all the seats full, but that's kind of a net balance. Public Works is also very standard, so we're not seeing a lot of surge in Public Works overtime.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Any other questions or comments from members of council as it relates to the financial update we received?
Okay, thank you. That concludes our report.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds, and everybody else in the administration for the comments. Moving on to our Community Development Committee.
The Community Development Committee met on Tuesday, June 27th at 5:30 p.m. in Town Hall. The committee discussed the following agenda items: the 2023 fair hearings and the Community Health Needs Assessment Report. First, the committee held the annual Financial Accountability Incentive Reporting fair hearing required by Article 349 and reviewed economic development incentive reports submitted by the administration. The meeting was for informational purposes only and no actions were taken. Second, Health Director Christian Wenrich outlined the Community Health Needs Assessment Report. The review was informational purposes and no actions were taken.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. We announce the report from our Finance Committee. Dr. Enos.
The Finance Committee met tonight, Wednesday, July 5th, 2023, at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The committee discussed and voted on seven agenda items. Number one, the transfer of funds related to the general fund. Number two, amending the general fund related to several adjustments. Number three, transfer of funds related to the non-utility capital fund. Number four, amending the non-utility capital fund budget, police vehicle. Number five, amending the non-utility capital fund budget, East Broad Street corridor improvements. Number six, amending the non-utility capital fund budget, Greenway rail line. And number seven, amending the CDBG home budget. Committee votes were taken on each of the seven agenda items. The committee voted to recommend placement and of appropriate bills and resolutions on tonight's council meeting agenda for each agenda item. Wandelin J. Enix, Finance Committee Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Enix. We don't have any ordinances for final passage tonight, so we're going to move on to new ordinances. The clerk's going to read Bill 27-2023.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 General Fund. Bill 27-2023 is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci-Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Bill 28-2023.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill 28-2023 is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci-Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Dr. Enix.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. Bill 29, 2023.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill 29, 2023 is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Dr. Enix.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. Bill 30, 2023.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill 30, 2023 is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Dr. Enix.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. And Bill 31 of 2023.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 Community Development Block Grant Budget. Bill 31, 2023 is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Dr. Enix.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. Moving on to resolutions, Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved that the City of Bethlehem is authorized pursuant to 11 PACS Section 12402.1 of the Third Class City Code to dispose of personal property by sale or otherwise upon approval by City Council via resolution. Now therefore be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the following personal property is hereby approved to be transferred by the Bethlehem Police Department. K-9 Blaze to his handler, Robbie Hoppus. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Discussion? I'll just say, like we did our other K-9 unit the other day, I hope they get a couple extra milk bones and enjoy their retirement. And we'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials is deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor or hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of the city-issued handgun to Thomas DeFrank, a retired city police officer. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 5-1. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials is deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor or hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Barrasso Excavation Incorporated to replace and upgrade approximately 1,500 feet sanitary sewer line and replace and relocate an interconnecting metering chamber at the border with Fountain Hill. Resolution sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Discussion.
I just had a quick question.
Tweet.
It says Broadhead Road on this. Is this Broadhead Avenue or is there another Broadhead Road other than the one that's out in the... Is there a Broadhead Road on the south side of Bethlehem or is it Broadhead Avenue?
It's right in front of the Comfort Suites.
Avenue. So, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
No, that's okay. Stood out because I've worked on that street for 10 years. Like that's Avenue. Road is up there. We all get them confused and end up where we shouldn't be many times because of it. So thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Dr. Enix.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that $19,407 in the general fund budget be transferred in the amount of $17,367 from account number 0301-40001, salaries, and $2,040 from account number 0301-4002, longevity, to the following: $17,367 in account number 0203-4001, salaries, and $2,040 in account number 0203-40002, longevity. Transfer is to account for a city employee transferring from the Department of Community and Economic Development and Administration to the Department of Administration Financial Services. The net effect of the 2023 budget is $0. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that $58,535 in the general fund budget be transferred from account number 0601-4001, lease salaries, to $58,535 in the account number 0801-42083, transfer to non-utility. Transfer would come from the police department salaries amount to purchase a replacement police truck.
Discussion?
The resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Apologies, Mr. Miller. Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center and sub-permittee Arts Quest for 2023 Lehigh Valley Pride. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem and the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Arts Quest for the 2023 Women's World Cup viewing event. The resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. I will accept a motion and then a second to consider resolutions 10H through 10K as a group.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Gramsci Smith, second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Discussion? Seeing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Motion passes 6-0. Please read the group.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolutions, are granted for 507 East 4th Street to install new window signage, 114 West 4th Street to construct an addition to the second floor on the west side of the existing Grace Mansion, enclose the rear two-story porch, relocate the existing garage along with new construction to the overall design and improvements to the courtyard area at 114 West 4th Street. 3 East 4th Street to install window signage and a new blade sign at 3 East 4th Street, and 125 East 3rd Street to renovate the front facade. The resolutions are sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Any discussion on the COAs? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passed 6-0. New business? Any new business for members of council?
Okay. I would like to read something. Please be patient. Richard Bucky Zagorski of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, passed away unexpectedly on Friday, June 30th, 2023. He earned his Bachelor's of Business Administration from Drake College of Florida, Fort Lauderdale. He was head of the finance department with the Lehigh Valley Railroad, a Bethlehem City Councilman of 12 years, a real estate agent, and he served twice as Northampton County's interim controller. He also served on numerous community organizations, including the Christmas City Fair, Camelot for Children, South Bethlehem Historical Society, past president of the Miss Pennsylvania Scholarship Organization, Sun-In Preservation Association, the Bethlehem NAACP, regular fellows, and the Finance Committee of Incarnation of our Lord Roman Catholic Parish. Here are a few words from just a few of the many who knew and worked with Bucky over the years. Number one, Maureen Dressen, president of the South Bethlehem Historical Society, said, "Bucky loved South Bethlehem. Not only his personal memories of growing up there, but his hope for its future. He worked tirelessly for South Bethlehem Historical Society. Bucky could always be counted on to support and attend our programs and events. He will be missed." Dana Group. When he served on city council, he was pretty quiet overall. And when he did speak, he was right to the point and didn't waste his words. He currently served on both the South Bethlehem Historical Society Board. He was a Southside native and recognized the value of history in marketing the city. And he served on the Housing Opportunity Movement, Inc. board because of his interest in affordable housing. Of late, he had been talking with other home board members about transitional housing for people who might be hoping to be placed in public housing, but who faced a wait list on their application. Dana also did an occasional real estate photo shoot for Bucky, and he was easy to work with. His ability to promote not just real estate he was selling, but also the city of Bethlehem was very special. Dana also enjoyed when he'd run into him on Main Street and he was dressed in colonial garb as the Sun-In innkeeper. Bucky engaged everyone or anyone who showed interest in the Sun-In's history. And then there was his involvement in the Miss Pennsylvania pageant. He was always promoting the talented participants in that. And on one occasion, he had Dana attend a prep session and fire off a slew of questions to an upcoming pageant contestant. "I think you might call him a man of all seasons." Third, Thomasine Nickens, vice president of the Bethlehem branch of the NAACP, said, "I met Bucky as I traveled and chaperoned the girls who won the title of Miss Pennsylvania. He was the president of Miss Pennsylvania Scholarship Organization. He loved and cared for these girls and supported each one as we traveled around the state. He loved them regardless of their political affiliations. Every time I would see him now, he would ask me, 'Have you heard from any of the girls?'" He understood that the Miss Pennsylvania Scholarship Organization was not a beauty pageant, it was a scholarship organization. As one of them has now completed her PhD in public policy, and another is an attorney. He would attend their graduations, weddings, and other special occasions. Several Miss Pennsylvanians send their condolences. Rachel Atkins, Kendria Perry, Mary Kay, and Nicole Brewer, just to name a few. They are all upset at his loss. I say he was Mr. Bethlehem at the best. May we have a moment of silence in his memory. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Enix. Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Quid.
First of all, my condolences to Bucky's family. He really was an incredibly special person and a true promoter of Bethlehem. He was a terrific guy. Very sad to hear of his passing. I wanted to point out that President Colon and I were invited by some neighbors on the west side to host a town hall for west side issues, and so we will be holding that on July 20th. 7 p.m. at the DAR house in the Rose Garden, and we're looking forward to getting together with folks from the West Side and hearing from them and updating them on some of the projects and issues that are particular to that part of the city. I also wanted to point out that the manhole cover issue that was shown to us on Ritter Street, that was on June 27th, and I think if anybody remembers, that was an incredible day. Flash flood warnings, massive deluge. In fact, I called in, I was on Broadhead Avenue driving home from work, and there were at least four manhole covers that had blown off of the off of their holes and were upside down in the middle of the road, leaving the manholes completely open. So it was shocking. I had never seen it before, but it obviously happens when we have extreme weather situations like that. And I know that, you know, we're doing a lot of stormwater remediation around the city. And so I hope that, you know, some of that can be remediated because it is quite dramatic when it happens. There's no doubt about that. I think that was it for me. Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? I'm going to say a couple things before we adjourn. One, as was brought up twice before, our condolences to the family of Bucky Sporsky. I'd only ever met him a few times in passing. I'm not going to speak as if I knew him well personally, other than he was always very supportive and encouraging in times when I could have used support and encouragement. And that's something that will never be lost on me, even in the brief interactions that I had with him. Councilwoman Leone couldn't be here tonight. Wanted me to remind everyone that the Yasco Park cleanup is going to be at 10 a.m. this Saturday. So again, over at Yasco Park in South Bethlehem, there will be a community cleanup going on at 10 a.m. And then before we adjourn, I did want to address a couple comments that were made during public comment, as the mayor had referenced during the mayor's report. Public comment is, of course, exactly that, public comment. People have their opportunity to come out, speak, give their opinion. But I've been on city council for, this is now my eighth year, and I've sat through a lot of public comments. I've sat through a lot of comments directed sometimes towards me, sometimes towards other members of council as a whole, different sects of council, for policy decisions, votes, questioning our motives, second guessing, things like that, which I understand. The community elects us, we represent the community, and for better or worse, sometimes we are criticized. But public comments, as it relates to using historical stereotypes, using inflammatory language, using language that really, I don't know what the motivations are. I'm not gonna attempt to assign motivation to them, but if it's looking for sympathy or support, that is not coming from anyone that sits up here, or I would guess any seats here in town hall. And everyone who lives in Bethlehem, everyone who studies in Bethlehem, everyone who works in Bethlehem, everyone who comes through for all the things that we have, should be able to move about freely in search of peace and joy, just like we all do. And to face attacks in a public forum or any forum, it is really just unfair. And to speak to a whole community and our neighbors, our friends, our colleagues, is really, like I said, whatever the intentions and motivations are behind that, I won't speak as if I know, other than I will say I don't think that those words are reaching their goals. So people will continue to speak, will continue to listen, but those 5 minutes are those 5 minutes, and I would confidently say they are lost to the ether once they're finished. So, that being said, this meeting is adjourned.